The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Up on Taconic, the official podcast of Taconic High School. I'm your host for today's episode, Reed.
And I'm your co-host for today, Aries. Here we talk about what's happening in our school, student stories, events, achievements, and more.
Thanks for listening, and let's get started. All right, so welcome back. First up today, we have the Thunder Report highlights.
This segment highlights major news from our weekly Thunder Report in a timed speed segment, and then afterwards, we go into more details in a bigger discussion.
All right, so this is our send-off week. This is our send-off show, so let's make it count. The vacation starting, I'm going to start the timer. That's what I mean by send-off. Sorry if I didn't specify. Okay. Just gotta find my timer app. There we go. Okay, Aries, are you ready?
That was yes.
I feel like this is the first time you've done that. Anyways. Okay. All right. 3, 2, 1, go. The fourth and final quarter started this week. Make sure to stay on top of your grades and finish the year strong.
Orders need to be placed for graduation cap and gowns. The fee is $35. Make sure to see Miss Perry and C201 or Miss Gaines in the office to pay and provide the necessary measurements. This needs to be done ASAP.
Congratulations to Catherine and Aiden, Raylan and Yara Liz? Yara Liz?
Sorry if you're listening to this.
We gotta continue. Four students whose artwork will be on display at the Norman Rockwell Museum starting April 18th.
In other breaking news from the Berkshire Eagle, the Pittsburgh School Committee voted 6-0 this week to close Morningside Community School at the end of the 2025-26 school year. Officials say this move is aimed at giving students a better learning environment and more of a level playing field with other students in the district.
Students in grades K through 4 will be reassigned to one of the district's four remaining elementary schools. A transition plan is already in the works, and officials have pledged to keep the Morningside building open as a community hub for the neighborhood.
And finally, be on the lookout for the full episode of The Hot Seat on our YouTube really soon.
And time. That distraction in the middle. Oh no!
It's okay. If you listen to this, I'm sorry.
It's no big deal.
I apologize.
Okay, so let's get a drum roll, please, for the time we got. And 1:12.33.
Do you not know what that means? It's milliseconds. Okay. Shush. Yeah. That's actually good because the show is 12 minutes. So
yeah, the actual show is 12 minutes. I highly recommend, though, you go check out our actual Thunder Report on the YouTube.
It's peak. It's peak.
So now we head over to the discussion aspect of it. I think there's one story that we should specifically talk about here, and that is the Morningside closing.
I know. I don't know how to. I've never been to Morningside, but.
Yeah, you went to Crosby, right? And yeah. I went to Conti, so.
I know they're reforming the schools, but that's like, I'm just like, what?
I think Conti's getting taken out of the equation now that I think about it. I think Capeless is still alive, Crosby.
Matthew Capeless is alive.
Stop referring to our coach, bro.
I'm sorry, Mr. Capeless.
Yeah, we got the Capeless, the school. We have Crosby's staying open, I believe. I don't know about any of the other schools.
There was one, I think it might have been Capeless. It was near the BD site when they, and a bunch of kids got like,
what?
Cancer.
Oh. Oh, yeah. General Electric.
Yeah. GD.
Yeah.
That was terrible. Anyway.
Quite some times.
It's okay.
Another highlight, of course, is quarter four starting. If I'm going to be dead honest,
failing.
I thought my last quarter was fine, to be honest. I mean, I failed one class, which is 50. Not great.
How do you fail an online class?
I was a little lagging behind, all right? Leave me alone.
But, yeah, I failed one class. So not great. But every other class I passed. So, I'm happy. How did you do?
Good question. My lowest grade was, I think, it was a 69. And nice. That... It was in algebra too. I don't know. The teacher, it doesn't get amazing, but no one knows who my teacher is. So you guys can't flame them. Anyway, there's like, I think, 3 algebra 2 teachers. So anyway.
They can narrow it down pretty fast if there's any students watching.
I don't even know what it looked like.
Graduation cap and gowns. We're in the final stretch of the year. It kind of feels like the year's been going by pretty fast this year now that I think about it. It's been quite quick compared to our freshman year.
Something I'm scared of is the documentary is taking a long time to edit. I should be able to get it done next week. I hope. But
you want to fill them in?
So me and Reed are both producing. Well, I'm not giving him any credit.
Wow.
We're producing a documentary on Taconic. What do you know about Taconic is the name. The editing is taking a while, but it should be done and out by either next Goon Week or the Goon Week after. What I'm scared of is I want to do a virtual tour as well, but I don't know if I have time for that this year.
Yeah. We're coming on the home stretches here, Aries.
Yeah. Well, 4 weeks left.
Fair enough. And I don't think we have a lot more to talk about here. I mean, the artists like that got their paintings into a museum. Like,
yes.
That's cool.
I actually know one of them. I'm not gonna say who, but I know one of them. He is a fantastic artist. I think it's the only boy there, but he's a great
Aiden?
Yeah.
All right.
He's Aiden's fantastic. So
that's good.
I'm proud of him.
And I think that's all we have. I mean, the hot seat. I could describe a little bit about that actually. So the hot seat is similar to Hot Ones. Well. Very similar, kind of. It's basically our senior friend Brendan, who you guys will see later on, is doing a interview with some friends from the theater department on their new Big Fish play.
Yeah,
and I can't wait to see that. I'd recommend buying tickets. I don't know how much they cost, but I might go see it. Honestly, it looks like a good play. If you go check out the Thunder Report, you'll also see an interview that they did with some of the theater cast. So that's nice.
Yeah. And like one of the cool things about those plays is the theater department is almost fully student led. Like obviously the teachers and all that, they help. But like a lot of the students, like they have like a tech, they have a director, which is fantastic. It's kind of like what we do here, but actually more extreme. The thing is like with theater, I feel like we don't get involved as much as we should. Because we know, I don't want to hate on the theater kids, but we know more than them about multimedia. So like, anyway.
Yeah, that's direct hating.
Okay, listen.
Okay.
We are literally trained in multimedia. They're just trained in Biscuits and Cheez-Its. Anyway.
It's quite some opinions you have there.
It's okay.
Anyways, I believe that is it for our Thunder Report highlights.
Yeah, yes it is.
Up next, our teacher, Mr. Choquette, interviewed Brendan Bales on his major reward he just got last week. Let's go to that.
And today we are here with Brendan Bales. I am Mr. Choquette and taking over a segment here. And we're talking a little bit about a really amazing experience that we had last night. This was in Worcester. So like, let's kind of set the scene of this. So, Brendan, tell me a little bit, let me set the scene in terms of this. You received this amazing award last night. It is the MAVA, which stands for the Mass Vocational Educators, Outstanding Vocational Technical Student Award. Only one picked, per, district, that has a vocational school in it, 60,000 vocational students in the state, and only 54 picked, and you're one of them. So congratulations. That's pretty amazing. Let's set the scene for the night, because we were both there. I was really honored to be able to come and watch you get this award. It was at Mechanics Hall in Worcester. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the room.
It was, oh my gosh, it was beautiful historic property. I never been there before, but I did some research before. Like, the beautiful paintings all over the walls, light fixtures. There was really cool chandeliers with a bunch of light bulbs. It like had the perfect feel. Yeah. I said this at the event, but like a perfect feel for a vo-tech or a vocational technical education like event. Right. It was the perfect spot. There was like, it was really cool.
Yeah, one of the most beautiful rooms I think I've ever been in, and I feel like I've been to some pretty cool places, mm-hmm. but that one with the paintings and just the lighting, everything, it was just a really amazing night. I think we estimated maybe 500 people there.
Something so, like that, yeah.
Every school had about a table of eight that was representing mm-hmm. the school and the student. So tell me just a little bit about getting an award like this, clearly, like to be singled out of everybody at Taconic, but then just when you think about just a small portion of students that got this award in the state, what does it mean to you, and kind of what does it kind of like imply for your future goals?
I think it's first important to like set a baseline of like what the other kind of students were getting this award. It was a lot of really, really amazing students. We all were collected in a back room before we went up on, we were like put up on stage to mm-hmm. receive the award. And in that time, a lot of us talked, got together, and hearing like the type of things that other students were doing and being able to share the type of things that I was doing, it was such an honor to be like honored with those people. I met someone who is the number one statewide ranked tree climber. And it was part of like their arborist or horticulture program. And being compared to all those people and like thinking about the work that I do here on Taconic TV and just like wider school related things of like creating video for eighth grade tours, things like that.
Right.
Being honored next to those people and having my successes shared with them was one of my favorite. It was really cool part of the evening.
You know, absolutely. And I think going through all the bios and stuff and to see like not only were you right in that mix of like some of the most amazing students, but you were up at the upper echelon of all of those achievements that we saw throughout there. We do need to work on your tree climbing.
Yeah, my tree climbing, that's where I'm lacking.
We'll get there. Maybe we'll put a bonus senior unit into it so we can do some tree climbing as well. The night itself was also really capped in a way. Not only did they do some amazing tributes to all of you, you had all of your picture and everything up on mm-hmm. the big screen while they brought you up, and every student had their single moment up there. Another thing that kind of struck me, and I wanted to get your reaction to this, was Senator Paul Feeney and his keynote. Tell us a little bit about that and what that meant to you.
I really enjoyed his speech. He's from the area, Worcester, Foxborough, somewhere in that like south.
Senatorial district, mm-hmm. I guess, for Massachusetts state senators. Yeah.
Yeah. And you could tell he was from there because it sounded like he parked his car.
He certainly did before
he came in. Yep,
absolutely.
But
go ahead. Hopefully you'll get the footnote of him in there.
But he told a story from his experience being a vo-tech student as well. And he like really awesome story that ended with telling your legacy and like learning the skills throughout it. I think he captured what like CTE education is all about, especially in his like final remarks with his speech, talking about how this is like you're telling your story, you're getting a head start, and these like the kids that were honored were like the only starting their career, and they're starting it so early, and they're already that exceptional. And everything that he said, it like really resonated with me. I thought it was really awesome.
And you actually got a citation, like assigned.
Yes.
Thing from the state senate, is that right?
Yes, I did. Yes,
that's awesome. So that's something you'll always mm-hmm. have too. That was signed by him, is that right?
Yeah, very it was cool. Signed by him.
Yeah, amazing. One of the funny things too, just before we get off the talking about the senator, is that the way they introduced him too is that he actually mm-hmm. was a fireworks technician,
pyrotechnician.
Yeah. So that he actually used to do fireworks shows all mm-hmm. around the state and stuff. So he was definitely this jack of all trades or renaissance man or however you want to describe him and stuff. But he was also an amazing orator. And telling that story mm-hmm. too about going through this project and really setting an amazing tone for all of your awards. So you got sort of this bronze plaque award, you got the citation.
Mm-hmm.
Where, I mean, in the big scheme of things, getting awards is always an amazing thing. But what, when you were walking away from that dinner, what was on your mind? What were you thinking in terms of like this takeaway?
It made me just more excited for what I have next. I'm hoping to attend Syracuse University for their Newhouse School of Communications to further broadcast journalism. That's what I hope to study, with some sports broadcasting. And I just felt more confident than ever after being recognized in this way, more confident that my future holds a lot of bright things. And being honored at this award ceremony is one of the first steps. And I'm excited to keep going and keep having opportunities and keep putting myself out there and hopefully keep getting honored.
Yeah,
in ways like that.
I think this is just the beginning. So, but I want to congratulate you. And I want, you know, it's so well deserved, and it was such an honor to be a little bit of a late night, a little bit of a long ceremony, but it was it was really amazing to an honor to be able to watch you get that award. So congratulations to you again. This is Brendan Bales, and I'm Mr. Shikat, and talking to you and up on Taconic.
Now, let's head on over to Aries with an interview he did with a math teacher from last week.
Thank you, Reed. Now moving into a discussion with two math teachers about mathematics, why it matters, how it's taught, and what it really looks like in the classroom. Today we're joined by Ms. Zuka, Mr. Siegel, and Reed. Thanks for being here. To start things off, please be honest, are you just counting down the minutes until you can go home and relax?
Mr. Siegel, I think you should answer that.
Yeah, as many of you know, I have a long habit of counting down the periods until we get to vacation weeks. And April vacation is the last vacation before the big one of the summer. And as we're having this conversation right now at around 9:45 on Friday, April 17th, we have exactly 3 periods left to go.
So, yeah.
Which is very exciting until vacation. So, yes, I often count down. I think we all do. Something to look forward to.
Could you just please be a little closer to the mic? Thank you.
Okay. Sorry.
It's okay.
It's
okay.
All good.
All right. Now getting into the actual math, what originally motivated you to study mathematics and what made you want to teach it?
So I originally went to college to study engineering. I was a student that struggled with math. But I discovered that I enjoyed math. I enjoyed the dopamine that you get from figuring out how to solve those puzzles. And I wanted to be able to help other people find the joy and learn how to do math. My high school math teachers discouraged me from being a math teacher and encouraged me to study engineering instead, which I did for 2 years in college. During that time, I realized for sure that I wanted to work more directly with people, helping them understand the math. And I have not regretted that decision. I enjoy that.
Yeah.
All right.
Siegel?
I went to college. I majored in urban studies, and then I went to graduate school and got a master's in business administration. but long, long ago when I was in elementary school, as Mr. Zuka said, I was a weak math student. And I was a weak math student when I got to what was then called junior high school. You call it middle school. But when I was in eighth grade, my parents got me a math tutor. And this gentleman tutored me through my eighth grade year of math, and it absolutely transformed me. Math became, not apart from being my worst subject in school, it became my best. And as I moved on to college and graduate school, I had always enjoyed math because of the concrete sequential nature of the material and the fact that it has a finite beginning and a finite end. There's not always necessarily one right answer, but there often is. And I found that the ability to solve problems quantitatively was something that I really enjoyed. When I got to be older and realized that I liked being in the world of education, I decided there was no other subject that I would rather teach than math. I have been teaching here for 20 years, and I pretty much love every discipline within math.
Yeah. That tutor must have been fantastic.
Changed my life.
Yeah.
All right. What's your favorite topic in math, and what makes it stand out to you?
I like teaching graphing, graphing equations of lines, because there's so many different ways to go about it. Like Mr. Siegel alluded to, like, and we talked a little bit about before, I just really enjoy, with math, there's often one right answer, but there's multiple, correct pathways to get there.
All right.
I would think that it's hard for me to pick one subtopic within math. but I would say that I've been teaching geometry for many years. I love geometry because of the fact that it is so spatial. You're not just dealing with quantitative algorithms and data. You're actually dealing with illustrations, and actually that can be related to real world applications. So I love geometry. I love algebra. I love algebra too. Back in the day, I used to love teaching pre-calculus. So I really can't. As I'm sitting here, you're asking me. I can't pick one subtopic within math that I prefer to any other. I actually I love them all, and enjoy teaching them all.
Yeah.
All right. Aries, what about you?
Kind of with Ms. Siegel, same thing. Like, I don't know. I mean, I like algebra because, like, it's really, like, you have to think with a lot of it. Like, it's a lot of thinking with algebra. I mean, math is just thinking in general, but with algebra, it's more like you have to, there's a lot of solving in it. I don't know. I like solving equations. Geometry is also fun. I guess I think it's fun because I like some of it's also solving equations. Like you have a triangle and you want to, you know, solve the angles, use trigonometry to figure out the sides. Like I like that too. I also like pre-calculus. I just like math in general. I don't really have a topic I like the most, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, on the flip side, is there a topic in math that you like, let's say, significantly less?
That's a hard question to answer. I feel like that's as hard to answer as it is for Mr. Siegel to pick a favorite math topic. Yeah,
I agree.
Hmm.
Yeah, I like Ms. Zucker, that you're putting that question to us now, I can't honestly look at you and say that there's one subtopic within math that I like the least. I don't have one that I like the least. I think it's those, that's sort of like a conflict of negatives. We actually work in the world of conflict of positives. So, no pun intended. My feeling is there's no subtopic within math that I actually dislike. So I can't point to one that I actually like the least.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. There's obviously ones that are just like a little less fun, but most of them are like, they have their own charm to them.
Yeah.
In my class yesterday, I overheard a conversation between two students, and one student had just figured out how to add the interior angles of polygons. And the student said, low-key, this is kind of fun now that I understand it. And I said, yeah, like most math, when you understand it, is kind of fun. Like you feel good when you're getting them right. And the student next to this other student said, oh my gosh, yesterday I just got into such a flow in this class. And I think like that's something all of us at this table share, is like we've all experienced that flow when you get in. Yeah.
That's especially what you want as a math teacher, that's for sure.
And that's, that's like a, it's like a, you know, feel good feeling, especially when you're learning a new topic and, you know, before it's like, what even is that? You know, you're like, what are those symbols? And then you figure out what they are and you're like, oh, I just unlocked a new symbol I can use.
this isn't so bad after all.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sure you've heard this all before. When will I ever use this in real life? How do you usually respond to those kind of questions?
As math teachers, we get that question every day of every year. And there's a lot of ways to answer it. And I think the best answer that I always give to all of my students is, nearly everything you do, whether you actually realize it or not, involves math. Whether you balance a checkbook, whether you need to know how far, you know, siding would have to be on your house in order to cover the whole house, whether or not you actually, you know, what's the air pressure that goes into your tires? You know, and if you look carefully, and I could go on and on and on if we had more time, there's nearly every application of daily life in some way involves math. High school students at your age, you probably don't necessarily see or realize all of those. But I think if you actually sat down and thought about life in general, you could make a list and realize there's so many things. Nearly everything we do every day, when you cook, when you bake, you have to measure things. Nearly everything you do in some way, shape, or form involves quantitative data. And math really, all math really is a way that we actually organize and manipulate that data to arrive and solve various problems. So I think, you know, without going on for too long, I would say nearly everything we do in our lives affects math. You just don't realize it right now, but if you look more carefully, you'll see that it does. And I think that as you refine and your minds are growing at your age, the ability to solve a math problem at any level is important and always will be.
To piggyback off something Ari said earlier and what Mr. Siegel was just saying, I think one of the things that makes math challenging is you can't imagine the math that you don't know. And so when you're going into a new math class or you're starting a new topic, you have no idea what it's going to be about. How could you possibly know how that could be useful in your life? And so I think when students say that, they are potentially limiting their potential. Students don't know what they might end up enjoying once they learn how to do it and what career opportunities that might open up for them. In addition, just for everybody, math builds resilience. It builds that skill that we all need to have, that when we have something that's difficult for us, we need to know how to break it down into smaller steps, how to learn from our mistakes, and how to not give up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next question. Do you have a favorite equation, identity, or formula? And if you don't, what are some ones that you like to use more than others, and why?
As I mentioned earlier, I've taught primarily geometry over the past umpteen number of years, and as a result of that, one formula or equation that we use constantly in geometry is the Pythagorean theorem, and that would be a squared plus b squared equals c squared as it relates to right triangles. And I have found for myself and found with my students that there are so many applications of the Pythagorean theorem. Which of course morphs into right triangle trigonometry at its next level, that I have found and my students have found have been so useful in so many aspects of their lives. So if I had to pick one, I would say the Pythagorean theorem.
Mizuka?
I have been fascinated by imaginary numbers. Yeah. It's not something that I often get to teach in my classes. To be frank, it's not something that I have a complete grasp of how it's useful in the real world, but I love the topic of imaginary numbers.
Yeah. They're really interesting. It's like you first learn them. In my Algebra 2 class, I had this student was like, this is imaginary. Why am I learning this? It's just like adding a label to something. And then I was like, you can use it. It represents a 90-degree rotation, I'm pretty sure, in the complex plane, but like they can be used, and though it wasn't really like treated well in what 1700s when they were created, people were like, why does this exist? And then a mathematician came along and he was like, this is why it exists. So yeah, no, they are really interesting.
All right, when it comes to teaching math overall, what strategies do you use to actually engage students and get them interested?
In my class, there's several ways. We often start class with a number talk, which reinforces elementary and middle school math, and has students practicing mental math and talking about math. And then I typically use we do, you do model, where students take notes when I introduce a new topic, and then they try a similar problem with support, and then gradually, like, I lessen that support. When students aren't engaging in math, I typically am finding that it's because they either lack confidence or they might be confused about something. So usually what I do is I sit by everybody at some point in the class, and I ask if I could check their work or if I could do a problem with them. And typically, even my students who are reluctant to get started will sit up and do a problem with me. And hopefully I might get that response of, oh, my gosh, I understand this now.
The method that I probably enjoy the most is we have 90, of course, here at Taconic, we have 90 minute classes. That's a long time. It's a long time for any subject. That's a long time, certainly for a math class. So I have found that the best, strategy I use is to break up the period and as into many small parts as possible. So that one doesn't run on for too long and it doesn't get too monotonous as a result. One of the things I like to do is I usually teach for about 15, 20 minutes up in front of my class. And then after that, I sort of ask them to engage in the problems themselves. And at that point, we often they can work with a partner, they can work with two or three, they can come up to the board and put their work on the board. And I think that that empowers my students to feel good about the work they do. empowerment also contributes to the growth of their own self-confidence and ability to do math. So I focus primarily on keeping my remarks short and making sure that students have a chance to show what they know, learn what they learn, and actually, make the learning visible in terms of what actually we're learning at any point in time.
Right. And finally, what is one thing you wish more students understood about mathematics?
Making mistakes is a part of the process. Nothing bad is going to happen if you try a problem and get it wrong.
Yeah, I agree with Ms. Zucker. I think that's making mistakes is absolutely part of the process. The other thing that I would add to that would be that I have found over the years, many of my students have what I like to call a quote-unquote math phobia, whereby students by their nature are just scared or afraid of math. They are intimidated by it. They have been since they were young children, and that has stayed with them into high school. And I have seen many students over the years sort of break that mold, if you will, because they realize math is not as intimidating as they once thought it might be. And so I find it very rewarding when my students for whom math was not necessarily easy once become more comfortable with it later on, especially here in high school. So I find that piece of it rewarding, and I'd like to see more and more examples of that going forward.
Okay. Thank you for being here and sharing your thoughts. Now, let's head over to this week's headlines with the Berkshire Eagle.
Thanks, Aries. Here are some of the biggest articles from Berkshire Eagle from the last week. I'm joined by Timothy, so let's get going.
Thanks, Reed. Pittsfield leaders are starting the process of possibly rebuilding Pittsfield High School, which was built in 1931 and is now described as being in poor condition. The School Building Needs Commission unanimously supported sending a statement of interest to the Massachusetts School Building Authority to try and get in line for state funding. Officials say the building is showing its 95 years, with problems like a cracking foundation, outdated heating pipes, and parts of the school that are not up to ADA standards. One presentation also said the building has many of its elements at or near the end of their life cycle. Even though the city would likely have to pay a share later, leaders say submitting the request doesn't commit them to spending money right now. Mayor Peter Marchetti said, "If we don't get in the queue, we're talking about an 8-year wait rather than a 4-year wait. If approved, the project could move toward a feasibility study around 2028, with construction possibly happening between 2031 and 2033. Now, we go back to Reed.
All right. Pittsfield officials originally considered a citywide ban on homeless encampments, but after months of debate, they ended up scrapping it and switching to a public health outreach approach instead. The idea started after concerns from downtown business owners about safety and conditions on North Street, but the plan faced strong pushback from advocates who said it would punish poverty. Mayor Peter Marchetti originally proposed the ban, but later said it was a bad idea and reconsidering the impacts, the city then shifted toward a program they focused on outreach, modeling after other communities that meet people where they're at. The Board of Health has now approved the draft plan, but it still needs final city council approval before moving forward. Now back to Timothy.
Thanks, Reed, once again. Hancock Shaker Village is kicking off its 2026 season in Pittsfield with its annual Baby Animals Fest. Annual Baby Animals, that's a tongue twister. Starting April 18 and running through May 10. The event is a spring tradition for many Berkshire residents and runs daily from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visitors can get up close with baby animals like lambs, piglets, calves, chicks, and goats in the round stone barn. I was there once. The festival also includes daily programs, demonstrations, and behind-the-scenes tours that feature hands-on animal experiences and wagon rides, though reservations are required. The article describes it as a chance for close-up visits with farm animals and highlights special events like sheep shearing on April 19 and 20. The season also marks the opening of a new visitor center in the 200th anniversary of the Roundstone Barn. Now we head back to Reed.
All right. Thanks, Timmy. A new bill in Massachusetts would place major limits on social media use for young people and restrict cell phone use in schools. The House is expected to vote on the proposal, which would ban social media for children under 14 and require parental consent for users ages 14 and 15. Teens would be allowed to use social media without consent at age 16. The bill also requires schools to ban students from using personal electronic devices during the school day and school activities. It would also push social media companies to use age verification systems and give parents more access to their child's data. Supporters say the goal is to protect kids, calling it helping to protect young people from harmful content and addictive algorithms. If passed, the rules could begin taking effect in 2026. Now, once again, back to Timothy.
I find that to be a bit weird. Why not just 13? But okay. The West Housatonic Street Fire Station in Pittsfield has reopened after being temporarily closed due to high radon levels. What? The station was shut down on March 17 after routine testing found radon levels 3 to 4 times higher than normal. That's not good. City officials say remediation efforts are now complete and the levels have returned to normal, I hope, allowing firefighters to return to the building and resume responding to calls from the station. Radon is a naturally occurring gas that can enter buildings through the ground and at high levels can increase the risk of lung cancer. And also, it's what makes uranium radioactive because uranium metal isn't radioactive in itself.
Well, there's definitely a lot to talk about there. Do you want to talk about some of these subjects?
Please. Let's go back.
Let's go back to the fire department one.
That is a bit more important. I'll say that. So radon, a little fact about radon here. It's Google Docs, whatever.
What's happening?
But a little, oh my God.
What are you doing?
Okay, whatever. But a little fact about radon, as I said, is that it's what makes uranium radioactive. Uranium in itself isn't actually that radioactive, I'm pretty sure. Don't go lobbing around uranium. It's high up there on the periodic table. I'm pretty sure it's farther than uranium. But yeah, let's look up some facts about radon. I just spelled it incorrectly. Radon.
I'm not familiar with radon, which is probably not a great thing on my end because...
Oh, no, it's probably a great thing. If you haven't heard of radon, you probably haven't experienced it. Symbol RN, atomic number 86, meaning it has 86 protons and neutrons in total. radioactive noble gas, meaning it's not that reactive. It has a sufficiently long half-life, a funny word for saying it lasts this amount of time, 3.825 days, so really dangerous considering how radioactive it is. Radon isotopes are the immediate decay products of radium isotopes, which I don't know what that means. What's the name history? Fifth radioactive element to be discovered. Jeez.
Really? Huh, that's kind of neat. By the way, we're using Wikipedia for this. Sometimes Wikipedia can be wrong, but...
It has a source currently, so I'm not going to bat an eye. Gas emitted by radium... gas emitted by uranium... Radium remained radioactive for a month.
A month?
A month.
Is that what it actually said? Is that what it said in the article?
Uh-huh.
Oh. See, I wrote the script, but honestly, it's been a few days since I did, so holy crap.
Let's
move on.
Why is there so many? Let's go back to Google Docs. So another thing that I kind of have a problem with is the new bill regarding social media. I am out of the age range for this, so I feel like I have some say.
I'm still in it, but I'm about to be out of it in September. So
it's oh, no way. Cool. I am still technically in it, but my birthday's literally coming up and the bill hasn't passed yet. So what I find...
I find it a little odd. I get where they're trying to come from. Yeah,
I get why. Like, protect the children and all that, but that's also what transphobes say.
14 and 15, I'd say that.
That's maybe, I feel like at that age, you're not dumb enough. I feel like at that age, you know not to fall for scams. So, like.
I get the extra parental advisory, but. Limiting the social media, man, I'm going to be dead honest. I use social media every day. I mean,
so sure. Do I, but it's mostly Discord and YouTube.
I use TikTok and Snapchat. Those are the ones I mainly use. I mean, YouTube as well I use, but that's just usually when I'm bored and I want to watch something.
The only like algorithm I've heard that's harmful is...
the brain rot algorithm on YouTube Shorts.
Oh, not just YouTube Shorts, YouTube Kids too. But yes. It's not even for kids at this point. But, like, there was one outrageous thing that apparently, allegedly, supposedly, this is not confirmed, Meta was apparently purposefully, supposedly,
selling data?
Making Instagram's algorithm very addictive. Supposedly, allegedly. This has not been confirmed.
Do they get paid for that kind of thing?
Oh.
I don't know that kind of stuff, but I get, see, people, I know
under
people
14,
school.
Like, okay, I get, like, under 9 because you still haven't developed, you probably don't know what scams are when you're 9, so I kind of get it.
Well, yeah.
But, like, then we go to, like, 11, okay, that... I wouldn't mind 12 and under, so under 13. I wouldn't mind. But 15 is a tiny bit outrageous. But 14, even more so.
Who knows? They might have leniency with it. Of course, hasn't been passed, but is in discussion.
When I say under 13, I mean 12 and under, so not including 13. 13, I feel like you know what scams are. You're not going to get scammed that easily. I haven't ever since I was 9, so that kind of proves
there
that.
There probably is some 13-year-olds out there who've gotten scammed. You got to think about that, too.
Well, yeah, but...
I get I understand that parental watch is more needed, but I feel like banning social media...
There are some 13-year-olds that have been scammed. Not most of them.
I know. The other side of the conversation, though, that is in there, of course, is the school ban. So... I understand during classes you shouldn't have your phone out. It makes perfect sense why you shouldn't, because you're learning and you're supposed to be learning, but...
Just have a giant Faraday cage around the building at that point.
There's a problem with that.
people need to, like, if they need to talk to their parents just in case of an emergency.
Well, yeah, that's why, like, notes exist from their parents.
I understand that there's, like, phones, like, school-built phones.
No, but, Reed, like, I don't think you heard me. That's why there are notes about that. Like, when a student needs to use their phone in case of emergency, there's a note about that. The school knows. So I feel like at that point, they would be allowed to have their phone at school.
Hmm.
Especially if they are, like, a good student, have never been caught with their phone, and probably have good grades. Probably.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, leniency. I'm hoping they have leniency on that, because I really don't
know. They probably will. It's Massachusetts.
It's Massachusetts, yeah. What were some of the other things in here that we talked about?
Well, the second thing was the Hancock Shaker Village Baby Animal Festival.
I've never been to one. Maybe we'll cover on that.
Oh, I love all these animals. Lambs, pig, or... Okay. Let's look at it. Sheep, pigs, cows, chickens, and goats. Okay, I don't know why the script didn't read kids then, if it's baby goats, but still...
Oh, is that actually what they're...
Yes, that is what baby goats are referred to.
Oh, huh. I did not know that. Fun fact.
Fun fact. In the Roundstone Barn, I was there.
I think I've been to the Roundstone Barn, but I don't think I've ever been over to Hancock Shaker Village for the Baby Animal Festival. Kind of fun.
Neither have I, but I want it. April 19 and... Oh, sheep shearing on 19 and 20. Starting April 18 and running through May 10. So, my birthday is within that. My birthday is April 26th.
Is that what you want to do for your birthday?
Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, honestly, I do like that we have, like, things like this around here.
No. I was holding that.
I know. You could take the book.
I meant the computer.
One last one that we're going to state before we have to... wrap up is the homeless issue.
So, yeah, there was this one time where Pittsfield was, like, very anti-homeless. Anti-homeless. I don't think any of my aunties are homeless. But there, Pittsfield was once upon a time, like, very anti-homeless. And they banned homeless people from sleeping in their parks. But now they're like, huh, maybe we should, like, actually help these people instead of preventing them from sleeping somewhere safe.
See,
there was also these two, I think, either Belgian or French dudes that, like, there's this thing called hostile architecture. It's what is known as anti-homeless architecture. And these two just random dudes in Europe, because Europe also has this problem, all of the world does, but Europe is anti-homeless and very anti-homeless in some of its parts. These two guys were able to lay on the hostile architecture in ways, not even by contorting their body. It was just, like, slightly awkward positions. So I think hostile architecture doesn't really work.
I mean, we do have homeless shelters around here. We do have to talk about that part. I mean, oh, wait, crap. I forgot we had the PHS one. But, yeah, homeless shelters... We have those. I understand why people don't want to go to them, though, because if you know by now, homeless shelters do have regulations that people have to follow and that kind of thing. And some people don't like that, and I can understand why.
I mean, I can understand why there are regulations. But also, it's like how, like, there's a landlord of, not of a house, landlords of houses are, I don't think it's a moral job to have, but that's my opinion. My opinion, you don't have to follow it if you don't want to. I'm a random kid on the internet.
I think it's better for them to have a roof over the head.
Because I was saying, there are landlords of, like, apartments and apartment complexes where, like, they also have rules and regulations. So, yeah. Like, I understand why there are rules and regulations in the homeless shelters. But, like... I feel like you should just try to get the person a home at that point.
Unfortunately, I don't think the economy allows for that. And it's also really expensive to own a home nowadays.
In Massachusetts specifically,
of course,
by the way.
We don't know we don't know backgrounds. We kind of can't speak for people and what they've done in the past to, like, lose maybe a house or something like that.
I feel like that's why that's asked.
Yeah. Of course, that could be something that this system could interpret. Another thing as well that we forgot to mention is the final thing for this discussion, the PHS rebuild.
That's mine.
I'd say PHS does deserve a rebuild. I mean, out of all the other schools, though, like the elementary and middle schools, I think PHS still holds up technically, but I can understand why they're going for the rebuilds. It'll make for a better learning environment and will make like them not want to specifically go for Taconic.
Okay. All right, that's fine.
PHS definitely does deserve a rebuild, I'd say. The rebuild, does it deserve the rebuild compared to other schools?
Yes.
I'd say not, because like
I'm pretty sure it's the oldest school
out of all of them all, probably, yeah. But we also got like Reed and Herberg, who probably do deserve new schools as well. But
I'm pretty sure Reed is getting a new youth anyway.
Yeah, they're splitting up the middle schools, which is another thing that happened like a few weeks ago that actually is going through for next year. So that's old news. But yeah, I think PHS getting a rebuild is nice. Just does it deserve it out of other schools? Probably not. But honestly, it makes sense on why they're doing it, and I fully support it. Anyways, that's it for this week's edition of the Berkshire Eagle. For more information regarding these articles, head on over to the Berkshire Eagle website. Now we head back over to Aries. Well, that is all we have for you this evening.
If you have any questions or ideas, email us at TaconicTV@pittsfield.net.
For more from us, check out our YouTube channel, Taconic TV, where you'll find our weekly news show, The Thunder Report, and much more. Thanks for listening, and have a great evening.